This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Swuhib in Washington. Here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
There's very little for us to gain and almost everything to lose by keeping people at home and keeping businesses shut any longer. We also know that our country's economy could only withstand a very limited freeze.
That's South Africa's Democratic Alliance opposition party leader on the country's lockdown, posing a bigger threat than the coronavirus. Details coming up also. Nigeria's health experts worry of a rise in unintended pregnancies during the COVID-19 lockdown. And the Ethiopian government is accused of holding on to power by postponing the country's national elections due to the coronavirus. All these and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. The economic fallout from South Africa's lockdown has divided the show of unity shown by all political parties when it was first announced, with major companies going into business rescue and others closing for good. The main opposition party wants the lockdown ended immediately, warning it's now causing more harm than the coronavirus. However, with the country's reported infection total of above 10,000 and rising rapidly, other political parties want the lockdown to stay. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
The economic pain has forced political parties who supported President Cyril Ramaphosa's lockdown measures to turn against him. A number of companies have announced they are closing shop, while some have gone under business rescue. Although the government eased some restrictions, many companies remain closed. A few that have been allowed to open are working at half capacity, bringing fears of job losses. Democratic Alliance opposition party leader John Steenhuisen says the lockdown now poses a bigger threat than the coronavirus.
There's very little for us to gain and almost everything to lose by keeping people at home and keeping businesses shut any longer. We also know that our country's economy could only withstand a very limited freeze.
Other political parties disagree, arguing that rising infection figures show they've yet to peak. Nkuleko Hlengwa is an official from the Inkatha Freedom Party.
We fully understand the challenges and the magnitude of the problems which have beset the economy and South Africans in particular. However, it would be reckless and irresponsible to have a hurried and rushed approach towards the phased-in approach of the lockdown.
However, those in the business front want the lockdown gone. Mike Anderson is the CEO of the National Small Business Chamber.
Small businesses, they don't have any resources left. Only 6% have received funding. The position is dire and the situation is poor. So we've got to speed up the economy, got to bring the economy back to life. Two-thirds of our working population work in a small business, and we've got to get these businesses back to life.
With South Africa already under technical recession, some analysts say if the current lockdown continues, up to 7 million jobs could be lost. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Some Nigerian health experts are worried there will be a rise in unintended pregnancies during COVID-19 lockdown. This follows a recent United Nations Population Fund report that there will be many such pregnancies in the world. Mike Mbonier has more.
The United Nations Population Fund estimates that COVID-19 lockdowns could lead to 7 million unintended pregnancies in the coming months. In new research, the UNFPA, in collaboration with health research organization Avenue Health, Johns Hopkins University in the United States, and Victoria University in Australia, said some 47 million women might lose access to contraceptives if health services remain disrupted and lockdowns continue for 6 more months. In Nigeria, Health experts worry about the possibility of unplanned pregnancies. Dr. Adebola Roberts is a consultant gynecologist and contraception expert at the University College Hospital, Ibadan. He says the use of modern contraceptives is generally low in Nigeria. Roberts suggests that women should get information on using contraceptives through the media, such as radio, especially now when many are afraid to venture to health clinics.
So the way out is to educate women about contraceptives, but to get the contraceptive is another problem. During this lockdown, they may find it difficult to go to family planning clinics and hospitals because everyone is afraid of catching the coronavirus. But I would prefer that we try to educate the women without having to go from house to house through radio jingles.
World Bank data showed that in 2018, about 27% of Nigerian women of reproductive age had access to modern contraceptives. Globally, about 62% of women can get contraceptives. A Nigerian government family planning initiative aims to raise access to more than 34%. In Nigeria, women give birth to an average of 5.5 babies during their lifetimes, compared with a global average of about 2.4 babies. Several other African nations also have birth rates of more than 5 births per adult woman. Dr. Corey Eugene is a nurse and midwife educator at the Lagos State University Teaching Hospital. She says the lockdown will lead to more births. She says there is need to do family planning and good nutrition during the lockdown.
And with this lockdown, there are tendency that more births will be witnessed in the next 5 years. And there is need to emphasize family protection, keeping fit and adequate childcare, as well as adequate nutrition in this current lockdown.
Dr. Eugene says, though the lockdown will bring couples closer, they should take precautionary measures to avoid unintended pregnancies. This is Mike Mbonye for VOA News in Lagos.
U.S. Deputy Assistant Secretary of State for European Affairs Christopher Robinson has warned that Russia continues its military support for the Libyan National Army of General Haftar and has provided material and logistical support to the Russian Wagner Group of mercenaries. Robinson says Russia's surge in support to the LNA has led to a significant escalation of the conflict and a worsening of the humanitarian situation in Libya. The United States continues to press Russia, Turkey, the UAE, and others to encourage LNA and the GNA to return to UN negotiations. However, the intervention is leading to more escalation, ignoring the possible coronavirus outbreak. VOA senior analyst Mohammed El-Shenawi discussed these developments with Essam Omish, president of the Libyan American Alliance.
The Russian role in Libya today is growing to become an extremely dangerous role, probably more dangerous even than the UAE's and France's and every other regional actors, because Russia is clearly set on exploiting the instability in Libya on several fronts. It's looking to exploit it on a military front. It's looking to exploit it on an economic front, and it's even looking to exploit it on a geopolitical front, where we're seeing a very dangerous plan to escalate. The use of the Wagner Group of mercenaries is really just to try to keep a plausible denial if, in fact, Russia is pressed on this. But the fact is that Russia seeks to do in Libya what it has done in Syria, and this is already showing an extremely difficult humanitarian situation in Libya. In the last several days alone, just less than a week, we have seen tens of casualties and tens of injured individuals, not only from the indiscriminate shelling, but really of the incursions around the capital, which are led by Russian forces. So if we were to identify one major danger that is on the rise on the Libyan scene, and it's very important for the U.S. officials to pay attention to, it's indeed the Russian intervention at this point.
The U.S. continues to press Russia, Turkey, and the United Arab Emirates, among others, to encourage LNA and GNA to return to these UN negotiations in Geneva. However, the intervention is continuing, leading to more escalation, ignoring the possible coronavirus outbreak in Libya. What's needed to stop the fighting and pay attention to the unknown level of infection in the country?
Indeed, this is a very dangerous time. Libya is not only in the middle of a very bloody civil war and an attack on its capital, but it's also dealing, as every country in the world is dealing with, a pandemic that is of unknown proportions. Even though we know the numbers of infections, at least the documented ones by the Libya Center for Disease Control appears to be low. But the fact is that we know that these are underreported, people are under-tested, and the pandemic is still at a time frame in Libya where it hasn't shown to its more severe levels. So the continuous pressure by the United States has not been enough. I don't think the UAE listening. I don't think Egypt is listening. I don't think Russia or Turkey or all of the other people who are involved in the Libyan conflict are seeing enough pressure to for them to cease intervention enough to allow for a healthy return to the UN negotiations ever since the Berlin process kicked off and of the recent parallel tracks that have been going on. We have not seen very serious implementation of the arms embargo or of the cessation of fighting. What's needed is to rein in Haftar. We need an international will that is willing to stand up to the continued violence and being able to firmly stop the intervention of folks who are providing Haftar with military aid and with weaponry. I think that would be a first step. Then comes with it any political negotiations or any political pathways that may lead to a way out.
The UN support mission in Libya said 80% of the 130 civilian casualties in the Libyan conflict in the first quarter of this year and attacks against hospitals were caused by LNA forces. It said the indiscriminate attacks on civilians by LNA could amount to be considered war crimes. Is that enough deterrence?
I think the crimes documented every day in Tripoli or in the areas around Tripoli today show a clear disregard from the Haftar's militias to any UN mandates or any guidelines. I mean, what has been done in the last several days or even before has been targeted shelling of hospitals, targeted shelling of civilian residential areas where the victims are children and women and elderly and folks who have nothing to do with the war that is taking place. The documentation is there. The real question is there a will in the international community to act upon its mandate? I don't know that the UN is going to be very effective. Unfortunately, the scene in Libya points more to continued fighting. I hope that will be enough deterrence within the UN structure and the international community to make sure that the people will come to the table, because until you rein them in, nothing else can move in Libya other than war right now.
That was VOA senior analyst Mohammed Al-Shenawi speaking with Assam Omish, president of the Libyan American Alliance. Opposition parties in Ethiopia have accused the government of flouting the country's constitution and holding on to power by postponing the country's national elections indefinitely due to the coronavirus. Lawmakers angrily attacked each other for 2 days straight this week, and the former ruling party, the Tigray's People's Liberation Front, even threatened to hold their own vote if Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed does not hold elections before a constitutional deadline of October.
Ethiopian opposition parties have accused Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed of using the coronavirus pandemic to delay elections and stay in power beyond his constitutional mandate. This week, Abiy responded, accusing members of the opposition of using the COVID-19 pandemic to increase their own power and seed unrest in Africa's second most populous country. The core issue is when Ethiopia will hold national elections. They were supposed to take place August 29, but have been delayed because of COVID-19. The government's mandate expires at the end of September. Many opposition groups want to see a transitional government put in place after the mandate ends. That would grant them more decision-making power until the government holds elections and a state of emergency related to the pandemic has been lifted. Making matters more complicated, The Tigray People's Liberation Front, which ran the country until Abiy came to power in 2018, has threatened to hold its own regional election in an attempt to consolidate its power at a regional level. The TPLF split from the National Ethiopian People's Revolutionary Democratic Front, or the EPRDF, coalition last year when the coalition's three other parties merged to form the New Prosperity Party. Yilkal Getnet, the leader of the opposition Ethiopian National Movement, spoke to VOA on a messaging app.
Who is trying to grab power? Is the government who dismissed all the opposition interests and he wants to stay in power without any constitutional rights? Or the Ethiopian opposition political parties who are asking for dialogue, negotiation, and to have a common roadmap for our country? Who is trying to grab power? It's the Prime Minister, obviously.
On Tuesday, Ethiopia's House of People's Representatives, the parliament's lower chamber, approved a measure that would allow elections to be rescheduled after the pandemic is under control. However, that has left the opposition fuming because parliament is largely made up of members of the ruling Prosperity Party. William Davison, the International Crisis Group's senior analyst for Ethiopia, told VOA that the coronavirus had left the opposition in a weaker position because its candidates are unable to campaign. But, he explained, the government is also looking weak because the constitution does not explicitly provide ways to extend the government's term.
So this is an opportunity for the opposition because the government is looking weak, potentially, because it's on these kind of shaky, unprecedented constitutional legal grounds. Yes, there's a constitutional conundrum here. Yes, there's a creative legal solution needed. Ultimately, like whether that legal solution leads to, you know, more peace or less peace is going to be the amount of political support it has.
Ethiopia is no stranger to political unrest. In October, 86 people died in 2 days of clashes after security forces allegedly tried to arrest Jawar Mohammed, one of Ethiopia's most prominent political activists, and his supporters came out to protest in several towns and cities. In a televised speech Thursday, Abiy said calls for a transitional government were not legal and accused opposition parties of trying to grab power themselves. Young people, he said, should not die. Mothers should not cry, and houses should not be demolished just so politicians can take power. Simon Marks of VOA News, Addis Ababa.
The International Crisis Group says the coronavirus poses a political crisis to Somalia as the country heads towards its scheduled November election. The Brussels-based think tank calls on political leaders to discuss the electoral process to avoid violence. Somalia has recorded more than 900 COVID-19 cases so far. Mohamed Yusuf has the story.
The Somali government is attempting to fight the coronavirus pandemic while preparing for the elections due to take place in 6 months. Senator Elias Ali Hassan, a member of the opposition, says the health crisis is no excuse for the government not to hold the election on time. The issue of coronavirus can be a small factor when it comes to election preparation. Hassan says the government has not prepared the ground well, the election venue is not ready. That does not mean the election won't take place. It will take place and it is a must, he says. But my worry is that the election not take place how it was planned on the one man, one vote process. Dahir Iman Jesso is a member of the Interior Committee in the Somali Parliament. He says the government will hold the election on time. It is possible to do election on time if we're not affected so much by the coronavirus and doesn't take a long time to get the situation under control. He says gathering of people is discouraged this time due to the virus, but if it is controlled, then the election can be held. The November elections are for the members of parliament. The elected legislators then will choose the president in February 2021. Somalia has never held a one-person, one-vote election. Opposition leaders say doing it in Somalia will be difficult due to security reasons and the troubled relationship between the central government and some of the regions. Omar Mahmoud is a senior analyst on Somalia at the International Crisis Group. He believes Somali leaders can reach agreement on how to hold the election.
I think, one way or another, there needs to be some sort of consensus process that happens internally in the country. You know, if all the parties agree that, yes, this is an unprecedented time and we do need a bit more time to run the elections, it's not necessarily an issue. But the issue is really getting everyone on the same page and get everyone to agree, especially given that the process was already complicated, but Corona adds a very much more complicated layer to it.
In an encouraging sign, Somali government forces have regained ground from militant group Al-Shabaab in recent months, and the government has normalized relations with some regions, although not with Puntland and Jubaland. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
The UN High Commissioner for Refugees is appealing for strong international support to help millions of Somalis facing a growing number of catastrophic threats from conflict, natural disasters, and the potential spread of COVID-19. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
More than 220,000 Somalis have fled their homes this year because of drought, heavy flooding, and increased violence and atrocities by Al-Shabaab militants. This brings the total number of those forced from their homes in the country to 2.6 million. The UN Refugee Agency says the conflict and natural and climate-related disasters are crippling the country's economy and threatening the safety and welfare of the displaced Somalis. It warns impending desert locust swarms, which have been creating havoc across parts of East Africa, could destroy much of the nation's food crops. UNHCR spokesman Charlie Yaxley tells VOA the harm from these locust swarms could be compounded by COVID-19. He says restrictions on movement and other preventative measures aimed at stopping spread of the disease are seriously affecting livelihoods.
People are seeing job losses as businesses are forced to close, and the people are losing their incomes as a result. And at the same time, we're seeing food prices rise. So all of these things together, and particularly with the other things we mentioned with regards to the floods, the ongoing violence as well, could lead to a perfect storm with potentially devastating consequences for these internally displaced people in Somalia.
The World Health Organization is reporting 928 cases of the coronavirus, including 44 deaths in Somalia. So far, Yaxley says, only one confirmed case has been found among the displaced population. However, he warns this could rapidly worsen. He notes most of the 2.6 million displaced Somalis live in overcrowded settlements where social distancing is almost impossible. He says there's scarcely enough clean water for drinking, let alone hand washing. The UNHCR reports the country's fragile health system cannot respond to a rapidly spreading pandemic. The agency recently appealed for $745 million to protect and assist displaced populations around the world from COVID-19. Some of that money, it says, is desperately needed to prevent the disease from ravaging Somalia. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Suhip in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Bonkibili Abaro, I thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/Sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.